welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community. And boy, we are doing some amazing things around here. I am just so jazzed that you actually learned that song, and it was so beautifully done. I think, you know, Michael Gott did that song on this platform, when I first got here. And because I have a relationship with Michael Gott. I was actually his mentor. I was very blessed. I was actually a little timid. I said, I want to give back in some way. I had such a good relationship with my mentor when I was a new minister. And they said, okay, take that. And they gave me Michael Gott. And I'm a terrible groupie. So it's really hard to mentor somebody that you have on a really high pedestal. But we developed a beautiful relationship. And he consequently came when I was a new minister here and did a beautiful concert. And that is one of my favorite songs of his that it was exquisite to hear you do it. I was really jazzed. So welcome again. I welcome you to this gorgeous day. We're officially in spring, and we've been looking at spiritual-based values and the way that we have this value for education. And all during the month of March, we've been talking about the ways in which we, as a New Thought organization, that we embrace the idea of education as a lifelong endeavor. And so we've had some lively conversations around all of that. And this morning, the title of my message is Directed by Belief. So this conversation we'll be having today is around how we can direct our beliefs and the importance of us looking at what it is that we believe, because sometimes we have carefully chosen our beliefs that sort of direct us through our life, and other times we have latched on to beliefs that we aren't even really quite clear about where they came from or why we still believe them. So the conversation all morning is going to be around the idea of belief, and before we have belief, or in combination with the idea of belief, we have thoughts. So we're going to be talking about thoughts and beliefs, and the way that they really do sort of outpicture in our entire life. So we color the details of our life based upon what we believe about the conditions that we live in. And our beliefs, what we teach in this philosophy and in all of New Thought, really, our beliefs are really always directing the course. And so we, at some point, choose to participate at a higher level, and we become accountable, a little more accountable for our experiences. And that's a good thing, because then we no longer have to feel sort of victimized to whatever's going on in the news. Sometimes it's just hard not to say it, but we get to choose, and we get to be part of it. And I think that's a really lovely part of what we're talking about. And the other half of that has to do with the message last week where we spoke more about the mystery. It was in Jane's reading this morning that things happen in life. Things happen on the planet, and things happen in our own personal experience. And sometimes the starting place is to decide what it is we're going to do with all of that. How will we respond to what's going on in our life and in the world? So we'll be continuing on in that discussion as well. And I think it always, for me, boils down to that great Henry Ford quote. I remember the first time I ever heard this quote. I couldn't believe Henry Ford said this, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So by what we believe and how we think about it, we're constantly proving those things to be true. So today, I'm being very specific in the way I'm inviting us to look at the power that we have as human beings, as a human race that is created in the image and the likeness of God. And today, specifically, we're talking about the way we are creative beings. All of us human beings are very creative, and that we are always creative. And that as we direct our thoughts, as we pay attention to what our beliefs are, we can not only make a difference in our own life and in the experiences that we're always moving through. Hopefully we keep moving, we don't just stop. But we consequently also make a contribution to what's going on in the world. So we see that we can make a difference in the world, and that the world itself, the planet, the people in our lives, even the strangers we meet in our daily endeavors, are impacted by those choices that we make. So, you know, some days if I'm having an off day, I try and be kind to the world by not circulating as much. Right, I'll stay in the privacy of the walls of my home, and I'll try and be a little more kind in the words that I speak if I know I'm having kind of an off day, because I know the consequence of that. But here's the thing. I have, as a minister and as a woman with very strong and deep spiritual beliefs, I have this fondness in my heart to remind us every so often that it's useful for us to examine what we believe about life, what we believe about the universe, and what we believe about God, and how we define what that essence of spirit itself is. Do we or do we not believe there is a power that is greater than we are? And I'm going to say, yes, we do. I'm going to help you there. Yes, we do. And we believe that it is a power for good. And we believe that through the teachings in spiritual study, and there are lots of approaches, you know, we say we honor all paths, so we're not just talking about this belief, but in spiritual study, generally speaking, there are ways we can take on some skills and apply spiritual principles and improve our outlook and our view and even a higher perspective in the choices that we make. So is the universe for me? Yes, absolutely. Is there a power and a presence greater than we are? Yes, absolutely, most definitely. And is it a power for good? Yes, it most definitely is. And I say that with all this strong and staunch absoluteness that I feel around all of those questions. But I want to say more than that. I want us today to really begin to get to that place where we are open to sensing that the power for good is on our side. That indeed, if it is the Father's good pleasure to bestow all this grace and all these divine gifts upon us, then we want to open ourselves not only to receive, but we want to open ourselves to recognize that we are always divinely guided, that that guidance is always there, that we are always being directed to that perfect pattern, to that energetic of goodness, that energetic of harmony, the way life has a natural instinct to fit together, to be creative, to experience joy, to know deep and abiding peace, and all of those other beautiful God qualities that we speak so frequently of. And even more than that, I want us to create a space today to just imagine how much we are loved. This is an essence, a power, a presence, and it is a loving presence. And that gift of God that is steadily streaming into our lives is that gift of love. And we are so immensely loved that really in our finite human condition, it's difficult for us to imagine how much we are loved. And I would say that if we could spend time every day just getting into that space of receiving that love, being aware of the presence of God's love in our life, I think that everything would change. That even the thoughts we would have as we're moving through our day would be a higher quality of thought, that we would understand thought and belief in a completely different experience from a different perspective. So that's what we're looking at today, thought and belief. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this philosophy, the science of mind, said, "To learn how to think is to learn how to live." That's pretty straight and right to the point. So what is thought? We have lots of ideas around what thought is. I found this great definition on the internet. It said, thoughts are ideas. They are memory-like, picture-like, song-like. They are usually short-lived, discrete events, unlike a continuous event such as the constant murmurs of air conditioners or rain. I just noticed we have a little more of one than the other in these upcoming months. I thought that was a sweet, different look at what a thought is. But we also say that thought is a creative power. Don't we say thoughts are things? Thoughts bring things into form. And Ernest Holmes also said in the glossary of the Science of Mind textbook that thought is a movement of consciousness. Now, when we are not paying attention to our thoughts, that movement of consciousness might not take us in a desired direction. And that's why we're looking today at this idea of directed belief and directed thought, because then they come together to move us in a desired direction. So what we're really talking about here is participating in our lives. We talk about that every Sunday, participating in our lives. Now, looking at the idea of belief and defining what a belief is, first thing I thought of was, you know, a belief implies we have some acceptance around some sort of an idea. The dictionary says a belief is a confidence about something that we may or may not have rigorous proof behind. So we sort of think we do. Whatever we believe, we wouldn't believe it if we didn't think it was truth. Sometimes we think this through quite thoroughly, and other times we can maybe just blame our genetics or the way we were raised, but we always are in a position to make choices around what we think. And your thoughts, as we learn to pay attention to our thoughts will then point us to what we believe. Because sometimes we have beliefs that we don't even know we're hanging on to. So what we know is that if we have limited thoughts, then we are limiting the possibilities for our life. As we expand our thoughts and our beliefs, we have expansive possibilities for how we can move through all of the situations we encounter. But beliefs are not bad. Sometimes we give, you know, we speak about beliefs in sort of a negative connotation, but beliefs are not bad. They just aren't always facts. So that's where everything changes. So I want to talk to you for a minute about something that is of great interest to me as I was doing the research for the message this morning. If we look back in time to the days of ancient Greece, there was a school of thought that said there's something within us, that something that dwells within all human beings that is creative, and it is a ruling spirit. This comes from the ideas of Socrates. So we're talking about the classical philosophers from ancient Greece. And Socrates actually had a term for it. He called that ruling spirit within the pneuma. In fact, when Clyde and I were in ministerial school, I'm not sure about where our other ministers attended school, but on the United side of our training and the current training for CSL, we have a whole class on the noumenosa, a different way of looking at what God is. And in the days of Socrates and the discussions that he created around the pneuma, we see that he was always talking about the breath, that breath of life that is that which we call spirit. Spirit is sometimes also referred to as that inspiration, that breath. And so at the same time as the classical philosophers were having such theories, there were also religious people that we're talking about the same theories from a religious perspective. So the Hebrew people, for instance, they also spoke about this idea of the breath of life. They said things like, "The Spirit of God has made me. The breath of the Almighty has given me life." The breath of the Almighty has given me life. I like to think of that as the way I've heard it said that Spirit loved us so much that it kissed us into life. That breath of life is the kiss of God. So in the Greek pneumatic schools, people were actually considered to be breath beings. Isn't that lovely? Breath beings. And the time passes, as time does, and about 500 years after Socrates, we have the entrance of Jesus. And Jesus spoke about these same principles, only now Jesus came and made it way more personal. Jesus came and said that humankind has this ability to have a conscious embodiment of the spiritual, to consciously embody that which is spirit itself. So humans, here's the message now that comes, that human beings are divine beings, that we are children of the Most High. And what we like about that, what's attractive about this more personal approach, is that it shows us that if we are created in that image and likeness, then there is that within us that by the very nature of who we are is divine. That it is that instinct in us that allows us to reach out and open ourselves to greater experiences, to those desires we have of experiencing peace and love and joy in other ways other than just watching a good TV show at the end of a hard day, right? That there are these divine urgings within us that are always calling that forward. So Jesus had this way he presented and had that theme of sort of as a man thinketh. As you believe, it will be done unto you. And so from these teachings then that appeared later, we're told such things that, and these are some of the things we like in New Thought, that we are of the light. We are not of the darkness. We are of the light. We are told that we are children of the free spirit. We are not slaves to the flesh. We are told that we live and move and have our being in spirit itself. I love that one. I can always feel that one wash sort of over me or sparken from inside of me and emanate outwardly. We are sons and daughters of the divine. We are sons and daughters of the divine now. And that means that right now, whenever now is, right now we are one with God. So this is sort of a consciousness that came 500 years after Socrates and the classical philosophers. And we are really urged then to sort of rise to that, to ascend. I like that word ascend. To live our lives from that higher perspective in a clearer understanding of what it means to say one presence and one power, because we're living our lives in an awareness that we are one with that power and that presence. So I brought this book this morning. This is a book that the practitioner students in our entire CSL movement, they're all required to read this book. And they read it in Prac 1. It's an old classic by H.B. Jeffries. It's called The Principles of Healing. Jeffries was born just about 20 years before Ernest Holmes was born in the early 1870s. And so he's a great metaphysician that was one of the first to write about mental healing, this idea of mental healing. So listen to these words that come from Jeffries. Jesus knew that there was but the one presence and power, and that it did the work. So, you know, he had that great message, the Father is greater than I do. You know, it's not me doing all this. It is the Father. It is that power that is greater than I am. So Jesus knew and he acknowledged that the work was already done. Now, listen to this, because this is where I think it gets very juicy. The work is already done because the one presence and the one power can see no evil and can perceive no illness. Now, this will knock you a little sideways if you're still praying for God to heal you of what ails you, and or to lift it from off of being upon you or whatever. But listen to how he goes on to speak about this. Jesus spoke the word of truth by knowing it. Get that. He spoke the word of truth, but he spoke it profoundly because he not only believed it, but he knew it. He spoke the word of truth by knowing it. So who would heal, paradoxically as this may seem, must be he who sees nothing to heal and therefore makes no effort to heal. So if you watch carefully, this is Jeffrey speaking, he says, if you watch carefully what Jesus did in healing, you will notice that he made no effort, that in fact, he did supremely nothing. Why? Because he knew how life works. He could stand before whatever was before him without seeing the appearance of the illness and call forth the perfection that the individual was desiring to have expressing. So they brought to him the blind, they brought to him the maimed, and in his presence, in the presence of Jesus, these conditions departed, they were gone. People were healed immediately. Why? Because they believed. Somehow, standing in that presence, standing in that strong of a presence of truth, allowed them to believe that it was possible. So what's interesting is, you'll notice there's never a story about Jesus checking somebody for a fever or stick out your tongue, you know, let me see what's going on here. Jesus did not concern himself with fevers or afflictions or diseases. Rather, what did he do? If somebody came to him blind, he demanded that the blindness be gone. If somebody came to him maimed, he would say, get up and walk. Right? It was a demand. He put his demand on the law because he understood how the law worked. He was not a student of pathology. He was not a student of hygiene or anatomy. Jesus knew and totally understood that what we call illness, what we see as something in form, is just the outer picture of the thoughts and the beliefs of the people. Wow. Woo! Think about that for a minute. What if we could stand in truth like that? See, that's what the example is supposed to be all about. Not about so many other things that we get sidetracked from. Not about all the rules that churches have put up or the ideas of, I'm only talking about all this right now because we are in the middle of the Easter season. And I'll tell you, every year at this time, I can feel the heaviness that comes with that. Because from a traditional Christian perspective, it's all about suffering right now. And what I want to say is that there's a whole other way to look at the Easter story. And by the way, we are going to do something really profound this Easter in this sanctuary. I've got some big stuff brewing that I'm quite excited about. But if we look at the lessons that come from that story, what I think we can see is the greater truths about what Jesus was bringing. Jesus didn't care how the illness had been created. He didn't see the illness. He didn't see the affliction. He didn't see or acknowledge the disease. He called forth the health. He called forth the wellness. So Listen carefully here. How can we learn from these lessons? How do we deal with problems in our lives that seem rather ominous? How do we face some of the stuff going on in the world that can look rather scary? How do we deal with illnesses, maybe a stubborn illness that doesn't seem to want to go away? Well, we do not make progress by getting stuck in the illness and trying to figure out how we attracted it. Now, I want to say that that is, in New Thought, generally speaking, that is one of the worst mistakes I think I see us do, is that we right away want to go, what did I do to attract this? Or worse yet, what the heck did you do to attract that in your life? See, it's not about that. If the great master didn't see it, then, and I completely align to that, that has to be the truth, then we want to not be focusing on how we created it, but we want to focus on how we create wellness. That's what every class we teach here is about. How do we do that? Now, I understand, because I've been teaching this stuff a long time, I understand that we want to know what we did to attract that because we don't want to do it again. But as long as we're playing at that level, we are playing in the realm of effect, and everything we teach here speaks to going back to cause, to planting a new seed, so that we can think new thoughts, so that we can change our beliefs, so that we can free ourselves from the old superstitious ideas that we sometimes get sort of stuck in. And I would say that I really think in the early days of New Thought, it was pretty superstitious. It was a great start, but we are not there today. We are far advanced from being there today. Because today we have focused on not just law, but love. We are really coming to understand what that means to embrace both love and law. And if you looked at this, the messages that I have spoken this month, you will see a beautiful blend of love in law in all that has been said. So focusing on how or why it happened, it really is dabbling in self-blame, in self-guilt, and that is a heavy negativity that is not pointing us in the direction of wellness. If we want to get well, we want to focus on how to create wellness. If we have experienced financial difficulties, we want to focus on creating prosperity. And if you have something going on in your relationships, we want to focus on what it takes to have a healthy relationship. All of that is the opposite of the way we play in the metaphysical guilt pool sometimes. So I think what I'm really asking is, can we really step up and find a new thought? If we call this new thought, can we step up and find a new thought for our own directing of our own life? And I'm here to tell you, you can. You can. It's absolutely what we stand for. It's what we teach. It's what we believe in. It's what we do. Thinking is a way that we change our reality through ideas. I keep thinking of that thinking. Keep thinking of that way that there is that divine imagination that is greater than ours, that is perfect, that we can tap into at any time. But there's belief behind every thought. There's a belief that we want to pay attention to. Now, personally, I think it's a lot easier to catch the thought than the belief, and I notice this in teaching also. So I train myself to notice the words I speak. I train myself to notice the thoughts that I'm thinking, and at some point, sometimes it feels like I'm bored with it. I'm just bored of that same old negative stuff. And I can then make a decision, but you have to train yourself to notice it first. So what we teach is to pay attention to that stuff. Holmes said this, deliberately, strong word, start a quotation with, Deliberately, we must turn away from that which hurts. The law of mind exists in a formless state and can only take the form for us which the thought gives it. And when we direct our thought, we are directing it. We are directing the law of mind. This is that place that is always fertile, always ripe with possibility. So here's what I think happens. Here's what I think I see happen. So we attract people here, and some people stay long enough to take a class or two, and they want this because it's attractive. It sounds like we could do it, and I want the better life, and I want the good things that come with all of that in every way. But then they get discouraged because they can't walk on water after a year or two. Right? And so what I would say is, not all of us are going to walk on water. We're not. Some of us are going to take a class and learn how to catch a boat or steer our boat, right? We've been talking this way. Some of us might even learn to swim. What a novel idea. And so the way that we do it will be up to us. And we don't have to all be able to walk on water. I don't know. There is a new movie out that has a good look at walking on water that I'm highly recommending, that I have really, really enjoyed. I'm referring to the movie The Shack, and I would challenge you to go see that movie, but not see it through any of your old belief systems. This would be a good way to try on, to notice what you believe, because I think that they do a fine job of looking at the different concepts of God in very much the same way we teach the triune nature of God. It's the very same thing. That it's so far out of the box that I'm really recommending it. I liked it much better than the book, and I read the book when the book first came out. But I think it's beautiful, and it probably I'm going to see it more than once while it's in the theater, because it's very thought-provoking. And it will test you, you know, if you do this well, it will test you to ask yourself yet again, yeah, what do I believe? What do I believe around all of this stuff? All right, so as we're looking at this idea of taking a boat or swimming and finding a way that's comfortable, finding the skills that are taught in practical spirituality so that you can embody them and move into a higher consciousness and a better understanding of what you do believe, I was thinking about the idea of learning to swim. And Hugh and I have 4 children, and they all swam. They all swam. They all learned to swim as young children, and they could all save themselves if they needed to. And one of our daughters who was a dancer. She was not really an athlete, but she was a fine dancer, and she was not a strong swimmer. As she grew up, and she had children, and some of you have met her. I'm speaking of my daughter Sadie, who lives here in the Arizona area. She'll be helping us with the murder mystery dinner again. Sadie figured out that she enjoyed running, and so she began to do marathons. And she was masterful at the work that she accomplished in setting goals for herself and being able to do a full marathon. She started slow and did a half and worked her way up. But at some point, she realized she wanted to be challenged more, and she wanted to do a triathlon. And in a triathlon, you have to swim and you have to bicycle. So she went out and she bought herself a bicycle, and she went out and she practiced swimming, and she's not a strong swimmer. And she got in an event. She signed up to be in an event. And so the first triathlon she did, it was a huge accomplishment just to finish it. And she did good, but they swam in a lake, and the water was very murky, and it frightened her. And she's already not a good swimmer. So as soon as she was done with that race, she decided she needed to do another triathlon. And now she has done several of them. But when she finished that race, she went out and hired a swimming coach. And so she starts working with this swimming coach. And the swimming coach points out two things to her, and I think these are good life lessons. He said, first of all, you haven't figured out how, you've got good form, but you haven't figured out how to do the breath. In order to be a good distance swimmer, you have to know how to breathe and how to do a really hearty exhale while your face is still in the water and keep going and keep yourself oxygenated. And you have to get rid, you got to have that good exhale, which is interesting because we're talking about the breath again. We're back to the pneuma, right? And secondly, you just got to get over your fear. So she worked with this swimming coach until she got stronger and more confident. She mastered the skill of the hearty exhale. Where in your own life do you need to practice that hearty exhale? And in that ability, in that improvement of her swimming skill, she allowed the fear to dissipate, and she became a good swimmer and now really has a good time in the triathlons. And yesterday, she competed and she took first place in her age group. Yeah. You know. So, it's kind of, as her mom, you know, I'm kind of in a, she was saying to me before the race, oh, I have this cut on the bottom of my foot, and my first words out of my mouth were, well, then you probably shouldn't run on it, honey. You know, you probably shouldn't do it. And she goes, oh, I'm not afraid to run on it. I'm just not sure about that water, whether it should be in the water. And so she was actually thinking about not racing, and then I saw on Facebook this morning that she not only went and participated, but she did well. We always have before us the ability to ask for help, to get coaching, to take classes, to improve what it is that we want to improve. But I think that what I'm really looking at today is asking for us to be more authentic in the way that we face our fears. If we can, and that's why I liked the reading. You know, this is not just feel-good spirituality that we call spiritual bypass. This is, we are taking a bold stand and saying that this stuff works. And this teaching, these skills that we offer, will work in every way in our lives without any limitation whatsoever. And yet I know that we really must look at the fears we have in our living, because our fears are the very things that that limit us. So as we take on the practical application, as we practice the skills, as we practice focusing on the end result that we desire to accomplish, we're doing that and growing our confidence, and we begin to face the things that scare us. So let's be authentic. Let's look at that stuff. Let's step up our game. I'm really inviting you to give up the magic. Science of mind is not magic. It's science. It's a law. It's working all the time. Can we let go of some of the old superstitious beliefs we have around stuff about, like, why did I attract that to myself? You know, that's that great story Holmes said somebody, he was at a Sillamar, and a woman set her brand new white leather bag on a picnic table there, and she smashed a bug, and it got a blood stain all over her brand new leather purse. And she ran up to Ernest Holmes and said, how did I attract this into my life? And he said, you put your purse down on a bug. So, you know, it's not magic. It's not superstition. We are not victims to our words or our thoughts. We are in charge of managing those things, of paying attention to them, and recognizing that it is the overall tendency of our thoughts that will point to what we believe. It is the overall tendency of the conversations you have, the words that you are speaking, that will point you to what you believe. And if you notice your beliefs could stand a little buoyancy, a little spiritual grounding, then let's face that. Let's not be afraid to do that. Let's authentically stand there. Let's practice the skills. Let's get a coach if we need it, and let's be accountable for the change that we desire to create in our lives. We should never fear life, because life is for us. Michael Beckwith has this great song. I have it played here sometimes. He says, who loves ya, baby? Who's got your back? Who loves ya? Who loves ya? Who loves ya, baby, baby? It's a great, I mean, think about it. Always, always we know who has our back. We know there is a way we can learn to exhale and to breathe and to stand fully as a breath being in our oneness with the great numinosa. Ernest Holmes says this, thought is neither good nor bad, but like any other force, the use of it determines our character. We can determine our character by choosing and directing our belief. Never forget who loves your baby. Let's just take a moment to anchor these ideas in words of prayer, the great truth of all truth. Let's just take a moment to open ourselves to sense and feel that great, great love. Love of God, the greatest force in all the universe. And we recognize that there is a power, there is a presence. It is greater than we are, and we are standing fully open and aligned to this great and powerful truth. Live and move and have our being in spirit itself. I feel the love of God within me now. I feel it as that activity of life. It is the movement of spirit. It is the breath of all of life. It is the kiss of the Holy Spirit that has breathed us into being. I sense the love of God here in this sanctuary. And I know it is that same essence that has called us together on this Sunday morning. It is all of the joy of life. One thing in perfect union with the next thing. The demonstration of divine order. It is beauty, it is truth, it is love, it is peace. It is that peace that passes our human understanding. And so as we stand in this beautiful pattern that has been revealed to us this morning, as we stand open and accountable, willing to participate in our very own life, we sense that which is greater than we are, that which is for us, that which is blessing us, that which is pouring grace into our lives even now. And I know that it is expansive, that it removes any boundaries of any great and good possibility. So that as we stand in the fullness of the Holy Spirit, in full recognition of all that is possible, that healing that is truly nothing more than a revealing of the truth that already is. And so I know wherever there is an appearance of illness, that there is that infinite mind of the universe that does not see it nor recognize it. There is that healing agent of life that is the wholeness of all of life. It is a pattern of perfection, and even at the sound of the words of this prayer, we are igniting within us a vibrancy, a vitality, an acceptance that as we breathe every breath, we are pulling ourselves back into that wholeness, that perfection, that beauty, that joy, that love. And further, I know that wherever there is any appearance of limitation, of any sense of any kind of limitation, that the full, prosperous nature of life is right where we are, right there. It is rushing towards us, for as much as we desire it, it desires to express in our life. And further, I know that wherever there is a break-in, relationship, a sadness, an unforgiveness that lingers, that even here is the fullness of God's love. And if God is for forgiving, we must be for receiving. And so I say, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Spirit. Thank you, life, for all of these gifts, for the revealing of this truth, for the restoration of our vibrant vitality, our light, and our love. For I know that we walk through this week exalted in this mighty truth. And it is in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude that I just release the words of this prayer into the law, knowing it is already done. And together we say, amen.